Joel.
Yeah, good morning, Governor. Joel Bradford, Advocate Newspaper. In terms though, when you, in your opening address, you did mention that the country has been talking to a number of its creditors. This is in relation to the proposed debt restructuring program. Exactly what are they saying to you, to Barbados, given the fact that a lot of them, well, there's speculation that a lot of them might incur losses?
Well, the talks which we have, as I said, is at a preliminary stage. I think the creditors generally understand the difficult challenges which the government faces. And from my perspective, I think they are willing to work with the government to design a restructuring program which, on the one hand, allows government the benefits which it is seeking, but which does not impair, particularly when we talk about financial institutions, which does not impair the solvency of these financial institutions. As you would appreciate, a lot of the savings of our citizens are repose in financial institutions, and therefore, as we develop a strategy for the debt restructuring, we would not want to weaken those institutions in such a way that it would have an adverse impact on anyone. And so that's where we're having the discussions to make sure that they're able to contribute in a way that does not impact adversely on those institutions.
Under the previous government, during the estimates, well, the debate on the estimates of revenue and expenditure earlier this year, mm-hmm. the then government had projected $1.2 billion in government instruments being used, or hoping that would, once those instruments were taken up, that they would have helped to narrow the gap between expenditure and revenue. Mm-hmm. Could you say, as of now, whether any of those instruments were taken up, especially the longer term ones?
I think what you're referring to is the financing gap, which would have arisen as the difference between the revenue and expenditures. But that is what it was, a financing gap which would then have to be covered. It was a gap which, if you recall, in the last press briefing, we indicated that the financing gap was too large to meet the available financing resources that were available. And in a sense, what you are seeing now in terms of further strengthening of the fiscal consolidation, as well as the decision to implement a debt restructuring, represents a significant aspect of trying to close that gap which was identified at that time.
The last time we were here, and I hope you all would bear with me.
Go ahead.
The last time we were here, you were telling us that the central bank was in discussion with, you know, some of the creditors to return those second tier reserves back to Barbados in order to meet the debt repayments which fell due in June or whenever. I'm trying to find out now, have those plans been put on the back burner? Because do we still need them?
Yeah, I would say that they've been put on the back burner, as you would recognize that soon after we would have had that discussion, the whole economic strategy changed, and therefore we decided at that point in time not to pursue that particular option. It is still an option which obviously would be open to us based on our discussions with some of the corporates involved, but we think what is important right now is for us to work to address the challenges through the development of the fiscal program that will take us through the medium term. The sooner that we are able to conclude our discussions with the international financial institutions would mean that we may not have to take that particular route that we were contemplating at that point in time.
Ryan? Ryan Broom, CBC News. Just want to find out there was a proposed sale of a couple of different entities, and BNTC would have been one. Mm-hmm. Wonder if you have any update on whether that is still an asset of interest by either the original proposed purchaser or any other entity at this time.
Yeah, there's no additional information which I have that I can share with you. I know that the new administration is not that keen on selling assets per se, but is open to looking at lease arrangements. But I don't know where those discussions may have gotten at this point in time. But suffice to say that in relation to the prospective privatization, there has not been any, further progress in relating to what was being considered at the time. As I said, the whole economic strategy, in a sense, has changed since our last meeting. And while I think the possibility for some type of privatization still exists, it may not take the form that was originally being contemplated.
Deanza Roberts again. Do you think, Governor, do you think the budgetary measures that were recently announced by the new Prime Minister and the government, do you think they'll be effective, number one? And in terms of taxes, do you think that we need some form of reform in relation to taxes? Are we getting a tax, the taxes that we're supposed to collect? Do you think more should come in? People are evading taxes.
Okay. So the measures which were implemented are intended to help to, as I said, reduce that financing gap which we identified previously. But more generally, I think you are correct that we need to look at a sort of comprehensive tax reform. Over the last few years, we have introduced a number of new measures. Some have worked reasonably well, some have not worked as well as we would want them to. And I think we have now to take a step back and look at our overall tax system to determine what is going to be the mix between, for example, direct versus indirect taxes. Direct taxes tend to have a greater stabilizing effect. Indirect taxes tend to grow very well once the economy is booming. But when it's not booming, you tend to have some losses in your collections from indirect taxes. So we have to take a step back and look at our overall tax system to see what we can, so that we can have a sort of stable revenue flow going forward. Now that is going to take time. That is not going to happen overnight, and therefore that is what will come in the years to come, that the government will look at the whole issue of tax reform. But the other point that you raise, and we've alluded to it, I think, even here on several occasions, is how do we improve tax administration such that we're able to collect the revenues from the taxes which we impose. And I think that there is still a problem in that area, and that also will need to complement a broader tax reform. The whole issue of can we strengthen our ability to collect the taxes that we impose such that we don't get the sort of revenue losses which I believe we would have experienced in recent years.
Sean.
Good morning, Governor. Sean Cumberbatch from the Nation. In terms of the budgetary measures, one of the key revenue policies has been abolished, the NSRL. What impact do you see that having in terms of the revenue, or is there anticipation that the imminent expenditure cuts will negate a need for a new revenue source? And secondly, what impact do you see the increased wages for civil servants and the other measures, including increased pensions, what impact is that likely to have in terms of the economy and on government's fiscal position?
Okay. Well, the measures when taken in their totality will lead to a net improvement in the fiscal position. So we shouldn't just look at one measure. You always have to take things in their totality. So if we are able to collect the taxes which we have estimated from the new measures, and if you recall, there are a number of new measures that were identified. If you are able to collect those those taxes, then they will be more than offset the revenue which we anticipate losing from the abolition of the NSRL and the expenditures which have been identified for, as we mentioned, things like wages and so on. The net collection is going to be positive as it relates to the fiscal. So from that perspective, on a full year basis, then there would not be an adverse impact if you take the deficit as your target.
And that's where we leave the press conference with the governor of the central bank. The press continues its exchange with the governor. We continue with Down to Brass Tacks. We will have a break at just about 5 to the hour for the regional roundup. And we continue until 1.
Down to Brass Tacks. We would have just heard the governor of the central bank, Mr. Cleviston Haynes, share a bit on the half-yearly report. These results are generally not very surprising. We have a negative trend in the economic activity, and this as a result of the high taxes, and then the what we've seen as a trend with the reduction in the length of time tourists stayed on island, and then the spend still not, you know, we're talking about the tourist spend for a number of years. We also noticed that the reserve holdings, they're still weak, and they will likely remain stable for the rest of the year. He said there was no expectation of any increase in growth for the rest of the year as well. The central bank also having to continue financing government is a consequence of government not having access to, whether we call it domestic or external financing. We know the decision to restructure, etc. But the decision to write off the overdraft facility last week, we would have heard the discussion in Parliament, and that gives government a little bit of room to access financing in the medium term. So one of the journalists would have asked a question and the governor would have replied, looking at the different economic strategy in this new administration. And of course, we knew from the outset, government would have taken a decision to suspend debt payments, and that was different from the previous government because they sought to close the fiscal deficit using tax revenues, and they had hope for a stabilization of the reserves by selling assets. And you know, there was a little contention on which assets, etc. But this new government is looking at a more comprehensive debt restructuring and some fiscal consolidation to achieve those measures to improve the economy. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good day.
Good day.
Good day. I would like to, in fact, comment on something said yesterday by Mr. Mark Williams. He said that Dr. O'Neill was, I believe, the first black elected to the House of Assembly in 1843. Right?
Okay.
Now, that is not, I do not correct that because that's not true. I think what he was referring to Samuel Jackman Prescott, who was elected, I believe, in 1843. Because Dr. O'Neill was even born then. He was born, I believe, in 1879 or thereabout. He was elected to the House of Assembly in 1932, and unfortunately, he died 4 years later in 1936. So I just want to clear that point. Hello?
I'm still here listening to you, yes. You said you wanted to clear up the point.
Yeah, I just want to clear. Because I think he was trying to make it a little confusing between Samuel Jackman Prescott and Dr. O'Neill. Now, he also mentioned that the Democratic Labour Party had destroyed the legacy of Errol Barrow. I cannot think of anyone destroying Errol Barrow. What he could have said is part of the legacy, maybe. But even so, I believe when he was referring to this, the destruction of Barrow's legacy by the last day of the government, I believe he was referring to the cessation of payment for the students at KFL, I believe that one. And then I believe the Hilton Hotel, which they intended to sell. Well, that has not been sold. But even in terms of KFL, you can't destroy Barrow's legacy where KFL is concerned, because Mr. Barrow established the university in Barbados. And whenever I pass KFL, I remember Barrow, and I remember when he flew over in a small aircraft looking at the site when they were selecting the site to even build the university at KFL. So whenever I see KFL, I see Albert Barrow, right? So you cannot destroy Mr. Barrow. What he should have also, he should have gone on to say that both parties might be accused of destroying former leaders' legacy, because I believe that the last Labour Party government did more to destroy Thomas's legacy than this, the last government, to destroy Barrow's legacy. In fact, I could think of two major institutions that were sold. I wouldn't have to tell you, Barbados National Bank and ICB. Compare them with even cessation of student loans at KFL. Cessation payments at KFL. I mean, it is more important to have a national bank and an insurance company than those, right?
Okay.
Hello? And then a final point I want to make is this. Now, all of this celebration of Emancipation Day, let me ask you a question. 50 years after independence, Barbadians remain no more. Barbados is no more than a consumer society where we are just purchasers of goods and services for some transnationals. Now, what is there to celebrate? Because to my mind, the true emancipation of Barbadians would be what Tom Adams did, for example, give us a stake in the economy. Subsequent governments have sold off everything, and we now are just consumers for people's goods and services. Fortunately, the present government, I think they have a different outlook, and I'm glad to see that they're not going down the silly road of selling off their assets, which creates a long-term liability for the state. Yeah, and so I'm very happy to see that they're going that road. But this is something that we should talk about. Not just something black. I mean, African clothes and talking fancy language and so on. To me, the issue is Barbadians having a stake in the country that we were born in, that our foreparents built, that the slaves toiled to build too.
And you don't currently think that they do? They don't participate?
No, not at all. Because okay. What is there to celebrate 50 years after independence? And we had a national bank Tom Adams gave us. We don't have it. We have an insurance company. He in fact, was the one of the first members to join the insurance, the ICB. Then it was, now what we have, that is ours. This is what I'm saying. These are the things that Barbados should be concerned about. Yes, we can celebrate Emancipation Art, but what is there to celebrate? We are still, I would say, living in, I would never say form of colonial society, economic colonialism, really. Because we're just as bad as when we were under colonial rule. And when we got that independence, I thought that main goal for us would be to see, given our history and the people in Barbados, look at St. Michael Parish. St. Michael Parish is really, vastly, a ghetto, to be honest, after many years after independence and after slavery. Look at St. Michael Parish. Thickly populated and thickly populated people, scarcely have any land to live on. And so on. And so what I'm saying is there's issues in this country that, I mean, it's hard to meet every day. And they drive around the country. So celebrating emancipation means, to me, giving people a stake in the country. And I think the man that did more than anybody else, that's why I would say, is Tom Adams. Go back and check his and he, in fact, his legacy, some part of his legacy, in fact, was destroyed by both parties. And they could list all the wonderful things he did. That was the most remarkable administration in the history. To my mind, the most efficient, the most successful administration that ever ruled Barbados was between 1976 and 85. And it is there, and the facts are there to support that. I don't have the time to go into it, but this is very true to me. And go and check and you see the best administration ever to rule Barbados, for me. Right. Yeah, no, I could tell you, I could even tell you, if you have the time, I mentioned a few things. Can I?
I actually saw a presentation by Mr. Ryan Strong, Honorable Ryan Strong, before the actual Tom Adams lecture.
Yeah.
And he did a pretty good exposition on the life of Tom Adams and the legacy of Tom Adams. And I would have heard quite a bit at different places of persons talk about the role that Tom Adams played in the annals of Barbados.
But let me mention a few things here to show, if you have a time. Mention a few things here to you. Look, for example, the establishment of the Barbados External Telecommunication. When the government, for the first time, Barbadians were able to buy shares in the new company that he established.
But even before you go there, and yeah. I know you're going to talk about the scenario with land and stuff like that.
No, I
want us to always look at context. You're speaking about a different time than now. Oftentimes we are not good at appreciating history. Because on the premise of what you're saying is that emancipation, what do we have to celebrate? That's your thesis. Yeah. What do we have to celebrate? And then you went on to say, you know, these things have happened, etc. But then you came back now to talk about the role that Tom Adams played, because you think that his legacy was the greatest contribution to Barbados post-independence.
Yes, I agree. For me, I would say so.
But there's another person who may have benefited in a different way from mm-hmm. something that another administration would have done.
But let me just feel before you make,
sorry? Go ahead.
Make a point to you. Make a point. I never knew Tom Adams. I never joined his party. And so I'm speaking as I'm not. No, I was never a beneficiary of his party or his largesse. Because I know people usually praise people because they were beneficiaries of people's largesse or party's largesse. So they would defend the morally indefensible. I'm mm-hmm. not one of those. I look objectively at the. I love Barbados, and the only country I know. And anybody who does good for this country, I try to be objective in my try to make that point.
I hear you. Yeah. Thank you for that clarity. And I wasn't going down that road. I'm just saying based on where you sit, you the individual, yes, not necessarily a beneficiary of any largesse, but based on where you sit, where you are, let's say in the prime of your life. Mm-hmm. When you were, because a lot of people's, a lot of things resonate with people in their working life, what mm-hmm. impacted them positively. Mm-hmm. And whoever was leading the country, mm-hmm. whether the economy was doing good at that time, they give a lot of credence to that leader, for whatever reason, because that's when they were able to, you know, to thrive in their life, feed the family, etc. I have a challenge when one administration is singled out over another. And I'm not speaking D and B now. I'm talking about personal. And I said this yesterday. I was talking to my husband. What Barbados needed 50 years ago is very different from what Barbados needs now.
Oh, I see.
And the leaders have to be leaders of the times, because a Tom Adams in 2018 may not perform the way that a Mayor Motley would perform in 2018. And likewise, in Oinatha, he was a visionary as well, and he had a CSME vision. And I don't want to single out any one of them, but I'm just using them as the two examples. Or even in my economic and history classes, the right, why am I losing him? Erskine Sandiford was seen as an awesome leader because of a decision he took to not have these structural adjustment conditionalities impact Barbados in a negative way that it could have. And then there are other schools of thought that say, no, if he had taken decisions earlier, the economy would not have been doing so poorly, and therefore we wouldn't have to stave off devaluation.
But let me say to you something that why I say that Tom Adams' administration was very, very the best ever in the country. Let me explain something to you. I am concerned about whether it is in 1950 or 2030. For Barbadians having a say. There was a wonderful article written in Sunday paper by Ken Hewitt. You read it?
No, I didn't
see Sunday paper. Read what he said. Read his article about privatization. In fact, one of the most enlightened ones I've seen written in Barbados about privatization. And he made a very interesting point that privatization should give the people ownership. I think it was the last white ownership, in fact, is what he said. Well, read it. You should read it. It's very, very good food for thought. Mm-hmm. Now, this point I'm making, you're saying, I'm making the point that, to my mind, at every stage, mm-hmm. we should be concerned about our people. We are the defenders.
And enfranchisement. I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying. Don't be so carte blanche in saying we have nothing to celebrate.
Yes, I'm not saying there is nothing. But what I'm saying is, look, liberation of a people to me is having economic control.
And also mental, we are the whole person. Okay, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Barbadians now, in 2018, en masse, have more than Barbadians under Tom Adams. We have a far larger percentage of persons who own, and I mean property, I'm talking about real estate.
I don't know if that is a good...
That's the argument you're using. You just said people who don't hold, who don't own anything.
Listen, what I'm saying is, I'm saying that, look, I am talking about, he created an environment. For instance, take me one thing that happened in Barbados today. Today, do you know there's no equity market in Barbados? Right now, where can we invest on? Anybody, both institutional investors and personal investors, cannot, banks paying very little.
Things in abeyance right now,
there's
yes.
There's no stock exchange, really. There's nothing available for people to invest in. Government paper, government is very weak. And, I mean, I just bought government paper because, well, what is there to put money in? Mm-hmm. By government, but mm-hmm. bonds of war. So what I'm saying is, Tom Adams created, this is what I'm talking about. The average man in the street wants a job, yes. But there are other people who want investment. And to me, an equity market is very important for the institutional and the personal investor. Let me show you the things I'm talking about. I'm talking about Cable & Worthies. I'm talking about National Bank. I'm talking about ICB. I'm talking about the flour mill, right? I'm talking about National Oil. All of these things are things that he created, even the Port Authority.
Okay. So they were needed for at that time. And I'm saying is, what if a leader comes along today and broadens? Well, they're not. Right. Listen to me. And broadens a leader comes along and broadens the capacity of the Barbadian beyond just owning, because a lot of people own a piece of the rock. We know that that's not sufficient. And we have enterprise. We have persons who are now entrepreneurs. We have persons who leave Barbados and carry their businesses. They trade. They are juridical persons. We have people who trade in mode four. I'm just making the point that you don't need 15 flour mills. You don't need four sets of legislation. Things happen over time.
Let me ask you a question, Ms. Gill. Suppose we had those institutions today. It would have saved us a lot of foreign
exchange. It could have done a little more. I don't disagree with you.
Based on what he built, the things that you're talking about could have been done if we had all of that he created. So that what he did laid a wonderful foundation for creating an equity market in Barbados today that would be available to us to buy shares in these entities. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm doing some research right now on financial prudence. Mm-hmm. And it takes me to us as a people, and this is where I see the mental slavery now, where we are not passing on the legacy of stewardship to our children and to the next generation. And real wealth managers are real people who have wealth. It doesn't just stop at them. It doesn't just stop at the business that they own in their particular generation. It is passed down to children's children. I think, unfortunately, where we are now, I hear people having the whole debate about white versus black and economic freedom and economic enfranchisement. And a lot of us blacks do not pass on anything to our next generation. That's where it starts. The biggest legacy you can give to the next generation is enfranchising them with an understanding of how to manage the resources that they have. And until our leaders get to that stage where they permit that, and I don't just mean leaders in terms of politics, I mean our leaders in terms of whether it's teaching system, whether it's our parents, etc. That's where we will fail as a people.
But Ms. Gill, let me ask you a question. I'm talking about the major corporates. If I bought shares in the BET that Tom established, right?
Yes.
I hand them down to my children, a company that was one of the most successful and a blue chip. I'm not talking about somebody investing in Hyatt.
Yeah.
But that's nonsense. I mean, that's what we call a...
No, different people choose different investment.
I wouldn't put one cent in that. Because
another person may be interested in that space.
To be on the stock exchange, to list on the stock exchange, a company must have a good profit record.
Yes.
And it's five years profit record.
Consistent.
So I'm saying that's what I'm interested in. And that's what I'm talking about. Where we can invest in blue chips. What would companies that would blue chips, like Light and Power, the telephone company at the time,
But you're limiting it to existing entities. What about I ain't hear you talking about entrepreneurs allowing themselves as well and their businesses to grow sufficient to the point that they get on the stock exchange.
I am talking about investing for stock exchange. You have to have a profit record.
Right, and you can only start somewhere in order to show one profit.
But people take the chance and then build the company and it becomes good and it sells shares and people buy it and it has a good profit record. That's what it's all about. But I'm not going to go into what I would call a green field or what.
That is you.
Right? Well, no, but
yeah, that is you and a majority of risk averse Barbadians. But we need to move past, which is why you talk about the mental freedom.
Yeah, but
don't only think about a light and power and a flour mill.
Yes, but the point is, I'm saying that if we had all the entities that he established and those were sold off to the people, like, you have a wonderful opportunity to invest in some of the most profitable and long-lasting entities in the country. And this is what you were talking about, Mr. Singh, being a visionary. But I would like to be educated further on Mr. Arthur being a visionary. I know he talked a lot about CSME. I mean, every time he talked, he used to talk to CSME.
I think what I should qualify that to say is that a number of, and I think most of our prime ministers of the seven that we've had, we know on to the eighth, most of our prime ministers have had visions. Some of them have been realized. Some of them have been cut short. But it wouldn't be fair to say
I'm not saying, Ms. Gale, that that person is not a visionary, but I am open to be educated because I might not be able to see too far.
Okay.
Right, but I'm always open to somebody because I cannot see everything.
Our current prime minister is a visionary.
Hello?
Our current prime minister is a visionary.
I would say I've been impressed so far. For example, when she made something that I had a clap when she said it. She said that and I was so happy to hear her make the point that selling off their assets is not a way to earn foreign exchange. And I had a clap when she said it.
Because she has a different economic strategy. This administration, they have a different economic strategy than the previous one.
This is what I want to hear. Because it's true. Selling off a state asset to foreigners is like getting a foreign loan. They have the same impact. You have to earn foreign
exchange. And in short term.
You have to earn foreign exchange to repay loan, and you have to earn foreign exchange to repatriate profits to the foreign company. So what sense it is to the economy? It's more liability than an asset. So she's right, and I'm happy to hear her say so. I'm very, very proud to hear when I hear her say it. And some of the things she said, I'm very happy. Very, very happy to hear some of the things she said. But I mean, so this is what I'm talking about. I'm saying that. So to say that Tom Adams' vision would not be relevant now, I don't agree.
I don't think you're putting words in my mouth. I don't think I'm saying that the role that a Tom Adams would have played for the time that Barbados needed him is different than the role a current leader would play for this time in Barbados. Right. We are now in the information age. We weren't in the information age then. We didn't have the infrastructure that we had as a country.
What was the information age doing for Barbados? I see a lot of people using computers, but you know what? You import the computer.
You see, the first thing you went to is computer when you talk about the information age. It is the World Wide Web. It facilitates commerce and a number of things. I'm going to have to stop you there. This is Dr. Brass Tax.